Here we go. We get some cheesy intro music. But not just that, but a crowd who love us. Hello and welcome to Pedagogzilla, the pedagogic podcast with the Pop Culture Core, live and coming at you loud from the Playful Learning Conference 2023, tucked away at the back of a cafe where nobody can find us. I am your host, Riggedy Diggedy Mike Collins, Senior Learning Designer at the Open University, man with a microphone and imposter syndrome incarnate. And I am joined to my left, as ever, by my super capable co-host.
I'm Mark Childs, Senior Learning Designer from Durham University and currently overdosing on jelly beans.
And across the table from us, we have extra special guest.
Claire Timmons from University of Strathclyde. I am now a director of teaching.
Congratulations.
For another year. And then I go back to being a senior teaching fellow in the School of Psychological Sciences and Health, but mostly speech and language therapy, where I teach linguistics.
So how is your playful learning going?
It's really good. Isn't it really good?
Yeah.
And it's very sunny, which is obviously a bonus. But I've really enjoyed it, but probably because it's my second year. So the first time I was slightly hesitant and it made me feel amazing when I left. But coming back and feeling more relaxed and knowing that it's okay that your session might be terrible because everyone will be nice.
I didn't realise yours was last year's was your first as well.
Yeah.
I didn't realise. I thought you were like part of the furniture.
Oh my God, is that good being part of the furniture?
Yeah, you gave that kind of, you gave that part of the tribe vibe. The tribey vibey, yeah.
Gosh, that's good, thank you. That's a good compliment, I think. But yeah, this year I don't, maybe.
So we are having a festival of fabulous failures where we're asking people for their most catastrophic, cataclysmic cock-ups, but what they've drawn from them and what we can learn about failure. So Claire, can you give us an example, a time where you have had a fabulous failure that has nonetheless been formative?
So I'm tied between my experience from Playful Learning last year and not my experience, I guess what I took from it. Right, I'm going to focus on that one. So last year at Playful Learning, there was at least two presentations or sessions about Twine. Does anyone remember?
I do,
Twine?
Yes.
Yep. And I thought this is the best thing ever. I even did a meme. There was a session where you do a meme and it was that one where it's the boyfriend with the girlfriend.
Looking over the shoulder.
And I was like, this is so clever. So the boyfriend was looking at Twine and the girlfriend was, oh God, what would have been similar to Twine that people didn't talk about? It was some other kind of learning tool. So I was like, this is the business, this. I drew a thing out and I had it all planned. And obviously I thought it was the best thing since bee's knees. And I went to the university and I went back home and I sorted it all out. And then my laptop started messing around a wee bit and IT got the laptop and went, well, we'll take that off.
Oh, no.
And they removed it. They removed Twine out of my life. And then I've come back this year and there's no Twine. Nobody talks about it.
So what was the issue with Twine then?
So I think my university deleted Twine completely when they removed it from my laptop.
But is this the sort of thing they've got against? I mean, is Twine a security risk? Or
I have no idea. I don't know what happens.
It's just HTML. It's just an HTML markup thing with a. That's so strange.
It's really strange, isn't it? So I guess it ties in a lot with a lot of these exciting ideas that you try and bring into teaching, particularly digital stuff. If you tell anyone, then
you never ask for permission.
That's, yeah. I mean, that's what we started with at the conference. Yeah. That you. Yeah, you're going to get some kickback. And I think that's sort of been the barriers or failures with a lot of my teaching, that as soon as I've tried to put it into a context where I start discussing it with people, there's always restraints and restrictions that come with it.
And some of those make sense because if it's about, oh, this isn't accessible for people.
Yeah, of course.
Or if this opens up, this is a security risk. But, I mean, the firewall problems. Mm-hmm. It's like there's some VR apps I couldn't use at the Open University because they lock down multiplayer games on through their firewalls, so we couldn't use Engage.
And all the productivity apps also use those same firewall ports.
And there is absolutely no reason to prevent people from doing that. It's just a thing they do because it's a gatekeeping thing. And so often you see IT department is called the Innovation Prevention Department. And yes, they have a role, but they step outside it so often that they somebody senior needs to slap them down hard when that sort of thing happens. But let's not get angry about IT departments.
Because we work with speech and language therapy students that are involved in the NHS, and when, oh God, it feels like I'm really old. I was like, when technology became a thing within the NHS.
That could have been like 10 years ago, let's be fair.
That's really true. When they had an online system that spoke to each other. But people started to talk about apps. So using apps that can help support sort of clients. And we had a meeting across institutions in Scotland about, what did they call it? I don't know, it was like the e-group or something ridiculous. Nobody could recommend apps, and nobody, like, actually the conversation stopped because it changes because of all the upgrades all the time. There was no way they could monitor all the upgrade changes. So again, there was this wall of, no, you can't actually use apps. So we ended up not then teaching the students the different apps they could use, because we'd been told, no, again, there's a restriction on it.
Here we go. There are not any major security risks. Browsers are designed to not allow HTML files to do anything malicious to your computer. Mm-hmm. Its practices align with industry standards. So they were just being dicks.
Yeah, they were.
So, I mean, it feels like this is an example of Peter Darling or Divishny as well.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
But what would you say? I mean, it feels like almost like there's no failure on your part. Maybe there's kind of like a wider systemic failure here. But also, actually, it feels like this kind of twine itself has sort of disappeared into the ether.
And
because it was very, I mean, I got very excited about it, I think, about 4 years ago. And I knew people were doing some really interesting things with it. And I've not heard anything about it in the last 9 months.
Does that become a problem with actually any sort of innovation? Mm-hmm. Is that you put all your effort behind something that then just disappears because people don't use it anymore, or because it just gets withdrawn? I mean, I think of all the RSS feeds I used to use, the RSS readers, and they're not supported at all now. Mm-hmm. So you can't include those in your practice. So what do we do that safeguards against that?
What's the lesson learned? Yeah,
yeah. What's the
wonder if that brings us back to quite a lot of the stuff that goes on here? Is a lot of people are still recreating board games and creating things like your physical escape rooms, and because you see that in all the sessions, there's so many real life kind of analog games that are being used, and maybe it is that you've been trying new techniques that are digital ones, but they've kind of not been supported, so they faded off, whereas you can get a bit of card and, a printer, and you can recreate a thing that you rely on.
Digital is transient. By its nature, it's always going to be transient. It's always going to be moving, and it could get, turned off tomorrow, whereas a piece of cardboard is forever unless you lose it.
I mean, I didn't adopt Kindle to start with. I adopted Aldeco as a way to access books.
Oh, what now?
Because it could also read PDF files, so I could download books for free.
You can do that on Kindle as well.
Okay, well, you can now, but you could. I don't know if you could way back then.
Yeah, you can just email them to yourself and it converts them.
Oh, you can.
It's really good.
And so the books that I bought then, I can still read them, but if I get a new phone and I can't download the app to that new phone, I can't access those books. But the ones I bought on paper. And also, there's not that upgrade time. You don't have to wait ages for the thing to install because the book's there. So, so you can't go wrong with physical media.
I feel like we're being down on digital, which obviously is a really useful thing, and there's some amazing stuff out there. But, I very much just gone right back because I can trust the physical items, and I can kind of make them. And maybe not amazing, but I know that if I've got that there, that is my materials, and I can bring that out when I need it. And, when you're doing a PowerPoint even and you don't know how to show the web page, like in a previous session we were in, you don't have that.
So two questions then. What would be your top tip for actually managing and mitigating or working with the transient nature of digital tools in education? That's the first one.
That is a hard question because I've sort of just said how much I love the physical ones. Thanks.
Yeah. But if memory serves, you did, like, for example, a fantastic presentation on Minecraft and using Minecraft to model various pieces of anatomy.
Uh-huh. And that's been around for ages.
And that was a great session. So, you clearly work in these spaces. So what are your tips for how people can work within these spaces, acknowledging the transient nature.
Yes, maybe you just have to go with the big names, you know, the ones that you can rely on that you think will continue because they're so popular. So Minecraft is now part of Microsoft 365. It is supported by the institution as part of that package. You can use things like OneNote because your institution promotes it as well. So maybe it's been a bit hesitant with the new ideas, that Twine was this new fab idea in my mind, but maybe I should have stepped back and just given it a chance before, like many things, I think after this conference, you just dive right into it and think, I'm going to do this. You know, I'll be great at it. So it could be just, yeah,
Or you find ways to curate the content outside of the app itself. So I'm guessing there's loads of things you did in Twine that you could recreate in somewhere else.
Yeah.
And then all the techniques and the pedagogies that you learn from that also apply to the next technology that come along. So it's a matter of abstracting maybe one level and thinking, this is what I'm getting out of it. These are the assets that I've created here. This is a version of those, even if it's just printing them out as a PDF and emailing it to yourself or whatever.
Yeah.
And then they exist somewhere, and then they become easier to put into whatever it is that comes along next.
That's true, because if you've designed it well, you should be able to do that.
Yeah.
If you've just done, I want to play a fun thing with Twine, then you're probably not going to be able to shift that onto another format. Yeah. But if you've actually gone through that design learning process, then you should be able to do it.
And the importing into the app is only the final step in a digital.
Yeah. Sort of seeing it as the tech enabler of the day as opposed to the output. And also, I guess, helps you avoid technological determinism where you're going, I'm going to do a Twine.
Yes.
And then you do a Twine rather than, oh, I need to teach a thing. And I think Twine would actually be a good way to do this.
Yeah.
This year.
Did you go to the session yesterday about with the playful learning guide?
So good.
Oh, that's so good. I love that so much.
Oh, with the mechanics.
The framework, I've been raving about it in every recording because I thought it was just fabulous.
Yeah. And being able to provide that kind of type of game for your idea and then actually provide real games so you can... Yeah, you can imagine how it could potentially look because you've got suggestions. And that maybe that's a bit like what we're talking about, is that as long as you start from the right place, then, yeah, you'll find a tool some point that will fit with it, not just, oh, I want a fancy Twine.
So we've been talking about... sort of like, you know, essentially the transient nature actually of digital tools and how that can introduce a point of failure. Just to take it slightly sideways to failure in learning more broadly, what would you say is the place of failure in learning and education?
I think it has to be in the classroom. And you have to be quite open and honest.
So you like your shame public shaming?
Yeah, pretty much. Because I don't think I can't appreciate the failure outside of the classroom, or you don't recognise maybe the failure. So you can spend time on something, oh, that was a waste of time, but that's your opinion if it was a waste of time. So the only way that you would recognise it potentially as a failure would be trying it out. And then if it goes wrong, but I find that difficult because I think that comes from years of teaching and confidence in your position. So if you're stable in your position as a teacher, and I am, then... you can do that. And I think that's hard when you've got new teaching staff coming in and you're going, just give it a shot. And they don't want to do that. They're worried about student evaluations. And I think, you know, over time you're a bit like, it was only two people. You know, it doesn't matter. Whereas in the present, in the actual situation, is where I want the failure to take place.
And
else it has no impact, I think.
And you've got a stack of successes to... back you up. So if you go, oh, that was just this one time, but before that I did it right, the 40 that went well. I mean, assuming that's possible. But,
So I don't know how you support failure in like newer colleagues then, and because I guess you can say, don't worry, if it goes wrong, it's not the end of the world. But if you're not confident in
What Laura was saying about the privilege of play.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe part of that, particularly with new colleagues, is helping them build up and identify their successes so they can start to feel like they've got that buffer of success upon which to really screw up.
Yeah.
Like to really, really like fluff up a lot of stuff. But, you know, allow people to actually you need to build up that confidence, essentially. Mm-hmm. You need to build up their confidence and their sense of security so that they can start feeling freer to experiment, to play, and then with an understanding that part of that might be failure.
Yeah, and particularly promoting this sort of teaching when people are comfortable with a distance between them and their students to just do a lecture, because that you can, you know, you can just perform and not expect any like feedback from it. And I think that is a challenge currently, and that's what I want to do, is think about colleagues within the university and promote this sort of, I'm going to call it active learning, I think, because I feel that that's getting a wee bit further away from playful. But I think you would get a bit of kickback of, you know, well, what if it doesn't work? And yeah, you kind of have to promote the success. It might take a bit longer than I was hoping.
Both ways you're describing it are almost like an investment. It's an investment either in success up ahead, so you've got the buffer, or an investment in the social context that you create. It's kind it's invest the success today so that you can fail tomorrow.
Yeah.
Tell your VCs, look, I'm doing something really good today, so I can really screw some stuff up.
Because I will.
You know, it's making me think of Simon, and sorry, I can't remember Simon's surname, from Hull, and his session. He set up such a relaxed, engaging atmosphere by sort of failing a bit, and that allowed for, I think, the audience relaxed, not the audience, the participants, to share.
Which
little
one was this?
This was the last session, wasn't it?
Yeah, just before break there. And there was a lot of comments about that stuff as well.
Yeah, bite-sized ways to pull playful practice into your practice playfully. That I've butcher the abstracts there, but it was I know exactly what you mean. It was a really nice low key, because Simon doesn't come across as kind of like, hello there, right, here we're gonna do a thing. He's like, okay, we'll do a little thing. It's got a kind of like a slightly kind of thing going on, and then it makes this really kind of like, ah, okay, we're all, you know, we're all here, we're all on the same, we're on the same page, nobody's kind of put themselves on a pedestal and just here we go. And it was silly and fun, and everybody was very honest, and it's a good group of people as well.
Yeah, and people seemed happy in sharing their really simple ideas, whereas you may be thinking a place like this, you're sharing your new, shiny, innovative practice, but actually it was a room of people talking about, I guess, a sheet of card. You're like, right, that's maybe all you need when you're trying to promote this sort of learning and teaching, then that's the sort of stuff you need to start with. And saying all you need to do is give students a chance to engage in a wee, like, slightly different way with a pen.
I remember those.
So there you have it. Engage and give your students a pen.
Yeah.
Engage and invest today in failure tomorrow and give your students a pen. Mm-hmm. Thank you so, so much for joining us. Where can people find you online, and do you have anything that you would like to plug?
No plug, I don't think. But I am on Twitter as Claire M. Timmons, and my Twitter feed is just Playlearn Conference for the past week. So you might not be that interested if you're listening to it, but mostly tweeting about speech therapy stuff and teaching stuff.
Oh, and we have an addendum to our last chat with Claire, which is that you didn't just get most... I can't remember what the phrase is now. It's on our thing. Most enthusiastic.
Yeah.
You got actual most something. What was it?
At the Student Teaching Excellence Awards, I won the best overall.
Yeah.
The best of everything overall, because they didn't actually state what the award was
for. The best
for.
Of everything for teaching.
It just said best overall.
Wow.
Congratulations.
Teaching wasn't even in the words.
Not just enthusiasm.
Yeah. I did get a nomination for enthusiasm. Thank God.
Yeah, God, imagine being labelled most enthusiastic. That'd be devastating.
No. Worst, right?
He says, looking at the banner to his direct left. Claire, thank you very much for joining us. Signing off now, I've been Mike.
I'm Mark.
And I'm Claire.
We'll see you next time on Pedagogzilla. Bye-bye now.
Bye. Bye.
You have listened to this on the Pedagogzilla On Tour feed. That's right, we've split our feed into two. So you can now go to pedagogzilla.com and with your podcatcher of choice, subscribe to both or either of our traditional content of pedagogic podcasting with Pop Culture Core, where we explore and understand aspects of pedagogy using pop culture lenses, and also our On Tour content, where we go to conferences, we go out and about, we meet people and try and share some of the fun, give you the vibes, and learn a little along the way. Head on over to pedagogzilla.com to subscribe to both of those feeds.